When someone asks you, what do you believe as a Christian, how do you respond? Do you have a confession of faith? I've written an article in the latest Issues Etc. journal titled, I Believe. You can read it by subscribing to the Issues Etc. journal. Just look for the subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Mark Hemingway answers the question, why Lutheranism, with why not? Subscribe to the online Issues Etc. journal, issuesetc.org.
As Christians, my family and I remember the incredible sacrifice Jesus made for each and every one of us, how he took on the sins of the world and extended the gift of salvation. And we recommit ourselves to following his example here on earth.
The problem here is that who cares what his opinion is? Our opinions do not rise to the level of Christian doctrine.
Satan has always been a used car salesman. He'll always want to sell you something that cannot happen and that will not work.
Hi, this is Eric, and I'm a steel worker from Pittsburgh, PA. With some noise reduction headphones and the new iPhone app, I listen to Issues Etc. all day long.
We started this series with Dr. Alvin Schmidt yesterday on parallels between Joseph Smith and Muhammad, and at first you think, yeah, I guess there are a few. I guess there's a few coincidental parallels. Aren't there bound to be coincidental parallels between two men who fancy themselves to be prophets and start a religion of their own? And well, there we're already talking about parallels that are not entirely coincidental. Today we're going to talk about, well, something called the prophet complex. It's not a psychological disorder. It's just someone who believes and exhibits a certain number of beliefs and behaviors that he thinks he hears from God and that he is authorized to speak for God. And both Joseph Smith and Muhammad definitely shared the prophet complex and a couple other religious and theological parallels between the founders of Islam and Mormonism. Dr. Alvin Schmidt will be our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. We're coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. Thanks for tuning us in. A little bit later, we'll be talking with Dr. Robert Gagnon, Associate Professor of New Testament at Pittsburgh Theological Seminary. And we're going to talk about several issues, one related to divorce, and that is a softening, a compromise on the evangelical view of divorce. There's actually been several books out saying, look, we've been too hard on divorce. Jesus wasn't so hard on it. Paul wasn't so hard on it. We'll see what Dr. Robert Gagnon has to say by way of response. And you've heard the old argument. The Genesis story of Sodom and Gomorrah isn't about homosexuality. And if it is, it's only about a certain very deviant kind of homosexuality. Is that true? We'll go through the biblical data and the church's reading of that story and see if that argument holds water with Dr. Robert Gagnon. You can call us for the next hour, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, or a tweet at issuesetc. Dr. Alvin Schmidt is a regular guest. He's Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College, and he's author of the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for April, The American Muhammad. Dr. Schmidt, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
What is the prophet complex?
Well, that is something that is very, very common for both Muhammad and Joseph Smith, and it's one of the key parallels, that they had a complex. The word complex is a psychological term. In the public understanding, it's sometimes seen as negative, but in psychology, formal studies, it's not negative at all. Basically, it means that there are certain related ideas or impulses that person has with emotional overtones and ultimately result in certain kinds of behavior stemming from those particular psychological or mental beliefs that they have. And so they both had a complex in that they believed they were prophets of God.
Now, you make a point, and I think it's a very important point, at least from the data that we can gather from their own writings, from their actions, from the accounts of their behavior. These two men actually believed themselves to be prophets of God. They were not charlatans who claimed to be, but men who believed wholeheartedly that they were.
That seems to be true for the most part. But are inklings sometimes where you wonder whether they really, truly believed or just felt it was a good way to control the followers that they had. For the most part, I think they did. But there are a couple of times when they seemed to at least perhaps knew they really weren't. But I'll go along with it saying for the most time they did.
Now, that is something that I think it's important not only for our understanding of Muhammad and Joseph Smith together, but the parallel between the two of them. Neither of these men decided one day to start a new religion. Their prophet complex begins earlier than their kind of public claims of revelation, doesn't it, for both of them?
Yes, that's true. The complex, or their seeing themselves as a prophet, was the first step, if I might use that term, in starting a new religion. It wasn't long, though, after they believed they were prophets that they began to start a religion. It didn't take very long.
Let's compare that, if we could, just briefly against kind of the general biblical gold standard of a prophet. What's wrong with the way that Joseph Smith and Muhammad together
A very good question, and I try to address that in the book. You know, just because you call yourself a prophet doesn't make you a prophet. And even though you may believe that you have had some kind of mystical experience that tells you you were a prophet, for example, Muhammad believed that the angel Gabriel spoke to him, although initially he had doubts whether that was really true. Very, very much so. It was his wife, Khadijah, that finally convinced him, and it took a little while. It didn't happen very quickly. In fact, he was so distraught and dismayed with it, he was going to fling himself off Mount Hira and commit suicide. And he came back home and told his wife, and she put him under her blanket and cuddled him and consoled him and told him, no, you are a prophet. And eventually he believed her. So she was in reality his first Muslim, his first follower. And with Smith, you know, he had his appearances. Of course, the problem we have with Smith, there are about five different accounts of the angel speaking to him. But the first vision that he apparently had when he was in his 15th year, not even quite 15 years of age. And then later, a few years later, he again, the angel Moroni spoke to him and told him he had golden tablets hidden for him, but he couldn't receive them for at least 4 years, from 1823 to September 22nd of 1827. He finally was able to, according to his reports, obtain the plates from which he derived the Book of Mormon. And so they both believed they were prophets, and as a result of that, they felt they needed to start a new religion. A new religion was necessary because Christianity was corrupted. According to Muhammad, the Jews corrupted the Old Testament, and the Christians corrupted the New Testament. And with Smith, it likewise was corrupted, and both of them had to recover, you might say, Christianity, or the true religion, as they spoke about it. And Muhammad produced the Quran, and Joseph Smith produced a couple of documents, the first one being the Book of Mormon and the Doctrine and Covenants, and then also the Pearl of Great Price, which ultimately are books that replace the Bible, although they never really said it as such. It's also very interesting that the Bible contradicted itself in addition to being corrupted. Yet when it was convenient for them, both Muhammad and Smith would quote the Bible as authoritative. This is a very interesting thing. So if it was authoritative in one place, why was it not authoritative in another place? They never, ever addressed that issue, and none of their followers ever asked them.
I want to get your insight onto how it is they gained a following. Maybe we live in a more skeptical age than either of these men, as distant from history as they are respectively. But someone says, I'm a prophet of God. Most of the time, people are not going to believe him. But both Joseph Smith and Muhammad, I'm sure they had their detractors, but both of them gained significant following, very loyal and obedient followings very quickly. How is that?
Well, yes. Muhammad, to take him first, he gained his followers Well, I have to backtrack a little. Initially, when he started preaching and thought he was a prophet around 613, 614, about 3 years after the angel Gabriel spoke to him, he tried to gain followers by peaceful means in his hometown, Mecca. He was not very successful. He gained roughly 60 people, and then they were exiled to Abyssinia or Ethiopia, as we would say today. Eventually, they came back, and I discussed this, why they came back. They thought, for example, erroneously, that the Quraysh, the tribe from which he came, and they were all polytheists, had accepted Muhammad, and of course that was false. But so they still hadn't accepted. In fact, they wanted to kill him. And so he escaped, took his hijra, his journey, from Mecca, 180 miles to the north, essentially, to Medina. And then he changed course. He said, I am the last of the prophets, and I'm sent with the sword. Now he gained followers with the sword, and he rewarded the Arab men with all kinds of booty. He interrupted traveling caravans and killed the individuals, took everything that they had. So he rewarded them in terms of material goods. He also, for example, he rewarded them in that they could have multiple wives. And all of this was appealing to the, I might say, tribal Arab society. Now, when you come to Smith...
Well, let's take a break before we get to Smith. Let's take a break, and we'll pick up Joseph Smith's method for gaining a following. Strikingly parallel, by the way, to the one employed by Muhammad some 500 years earlier. When we come back, we're going to continue our part two of our four-part series on the parallels between Joseph Smith and Muhammad with Dr. Alvin Schmidt, Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College and author of The Issues, Etc., Book of the Month for April, The American Muhammad. I'll tell you more about the book, and we'll continue our conversation right after this.
Hi, this is Pastor Dan Kistler of Our Savior's Lutheran Church in Pacifica, California. A small congregation on the Pacific Coast just south of San Francisco, we invite you to join us as we receive Christ's gifts of forgiveness, life, and salvation that He won for us on the cross and now delivers to us through His Word, baptism, and the Lord's Supper. For more information about us or for free downloadable sermons, visit our website at oursaviorspacifica.com. God's peace be with you always in our Savior, Jesus Christ.
Islam, worship, feminism, pietism, postmodernism. You can meet and hear Issues Etc. regular guests discussing these topics at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 14th and 15th in Collinsville, Illinois. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Registration is $100 per person. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 14 and 15 in Collinsville, Illinois, issuesetc.org.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The church's music from the second century.
Shepherd of tender youth, guiding in love and truth.
The sixth century. The 12th century. The 16th century. The 21st century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. Alvin Schmidt is our guest. We continue our series with him on parallels between Joseph Smith and Muhammad today, the religious parallels between these two founders of Mormonism and Islam, respectively. He's written the book called The American Mohammed. It's a tremendous resource. If you've ever read anything from Dr. Schmidt, you know that he does his research. He does his research exhaustively. He makes sure that everything he says is documented. If he cannot document something that he says, he makes it clear there as well that he can't completely document it. When he's making a surmise, when he's making a supposition, he's very clear there. It's good, solid research on any subject he writes on, and especially on the one he's most recently written on, The American Mohammed, The Parallels Between Joseph Smith and Mohammed. It's our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for April. I highly recommend it. You can find out more about it at our website, issuesetc.org, or call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040, and ask for the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for April, The American Mohammed by Dr. Alvin Schmidt. Dr. Schmidt, you were about to move on to Joseph Smith and how it is that perhaps because of, or maybe despite his claims of being a prophet of God, he gains a very loyal and obedient following as well.
Yes, and I want to make one more comment in terms of Muhammad. His followers, of course, were gained and said obtained basically for material benefits, sexual benefits, if I may use that term. And if you left, you were guilty. You're going to lose your life, and so that's basically what happened with Muhammad after 622 when he came to Medina. Now, if we move to Smith, it's a little different, but there are similarities. Both of them, if I may also again go back a little bit to Muhammad, both of them said they were prophets, and they capitalized on people's ignorance. The Arabs obviously didn't know anything about prophecy as it was in the Old Testament or the New Testament. They didn't have a clue. And when it came to Joseph Smith, there was a tremendous amount of religious ignorance too. Most of the early Mormons that followed Smith were quasi-Protestants, but really didn't understand too much. They came from the various denominations like Methodists, Baptists, the Church of and other kinds of sects in the Western New York area. And given that they were relatively ignorant about prophecy, Joseph Smith, and to some extent this was true also of Muhammad, were very charismatic individuals. They were able to, if I may use an old hackneyed phrase, they were able to sell an Eskimo a deep freeze. Likewise, they were able to sell them religious teachings that conflicted truly, seriously, with the Bible, but they didn't know that. And given that he had this persuasive power ability, and they were, Smith, for example, called them and gave them the impression that they were special people. They were God's people above all others, and that brought them into a great deal of trouble when they got moved out in Missouri, where they had nothing to do with other people. They tried to consecrate or confiscate even the land of other people because they were God's special chosen people. That appealed to the Mormons, and the fact that he was able to amass a great deal of money, et cetera, and whatnot, all that they gave to him, and then built the first temple in 1836 in Kirtland, Ohio, not too far from Cleveland, and established an illegal bank from which they could benefit. All that went broke later, and not too long after. But that's, for example, what made people come. And they came from long distance. They came from overseas, from England, from Canada. And even to some extent, a few came from Palestine, which is a very amazing thing when people search for truth sometimes. They don't have any criteria to test what they think is true, what it really is. And that's described both the followers of Muhammad as well as of Joseph Smith.
One other parallel with regard to their prophetic claims, and that is you say both men had very convenient revelations. They seemed to hear from God just when they needed to. Give us a couple examples from the lives of both men.
This is the most amazing thing out of all. Their revelations were not received, but as I say, they were conceived in their own minds. And when Joseph Smith, Muhammad, first of all, one particular example, he wanted to have the wife of his adopted son, former slave, and because he had seen her in a tent, partly unclad, and she looked very attractive to him. But he had a problem. According to the law of forbidden degrees, he couldn't really have her. So he asked God for a revelation, and soon God gave him a revelation he could have her. And, of course, the husband of this wife obviously wasn't about to argue, knowing who Muhammad was. So he gave her, and then Muhammad thanked God for giving him this revelation. Likewise with Smith, he often said, "God, it doesn't take me long for God to give me a revelation." And whenever he asked God, he gave him permission. For example, there was one time he said, in the early stages of Mormon life, revelation that you shall not have another wife, which coincided, of course, with the biblical mandates. But in 1843, he got a revelation that he could have plural wives. Again, asking God for special revelation, he had already had plural wives before that, but he wanted documentation so he could tell people later on that he had a special revelation. So again, their revelations were not received, but conceived in their own mind. And this is where, for example, one sometimes wonders whether they really, truly believe they were totally prophetic or whether they were using this as an example to placate and in many ways sell the followers a false bill of goods.
The probably most stunning parallel theologically between the two men is both of them made claims vis-a-vis Christianity that are just remarkably similar. What were they, Dr. Schmidt?
You mean in terms of for example, one that comes to mind quickly is that both of them had a false concept of God and of Jesus Christ. Muhammad, for example, in the Quran, denies that the crucifixion took place. Joseph Smith didn't deny the crucifixion, but he, for example, believed in multiple gods. There were multiple gods that created the world, for example, and that Jesus Christ, for example, did not really atone for the sins of the world on the cross, but in the Garden of Gethsemane. And this is, by the way, why you, to this day in the Church of Latter-day Saints, the Mormon group in Utah, does not have a cross in any form or shape and never will have one. And so, again, Christ is a person who, while he didn't deny crucifixion, it is not something you want to use and symbolize or to help people understand what Christ really accomplished for us on the cross. That is, again, a great problem with Joseph Smith, and there's another similarity there between him and Muhammad.
They both also claimed that Christianity was corrupted in some form, and that's why they needed to begin anew or to kind of restore true religion to the world.
Yes,
we got a few minutes before our break. Talk about that.
Yes, that's true. And, you know, it's interesting with the word restore. You can only restore something if it's no longer been in existence. Well, Christianity obviously was still in existence. So again, there's a kind of a falsehood here. And theirs was the true religion. And as I said, many times their religion quotes the Bible, uses the Bible, but it nevertheless was a corrupt book. It was corrupt as an institution, and they were going to replace it, and they did. Islam replaces basically Christianity. It didn't supplant Christianity, but it undermined Christianity, which it does to this very day.
And their claim about their holy books, either the Book of Mormon, Pearl of Great Price, Doctrine and Covenants, or the Quran, and other writings related to the life of Muhammad, do they both make similar claims about their new scriptures? About a minute here, Dr. Schmidt.
They vary to some degree in terms of, for example, none of them really talk about a God of love, and so there is there's a similarity, if I may add. And, I'm trying to answer your question again. I'm going to ask you one more time to repeat it. I kind of lost it.
Do they essentially say the same thing about their holy books, that these are the real deal God? About a minute to respond.
Yes, they are much more holy than the Bible itself. Of course, the Bible is corrupted. So their books, the Quran comes down from the perfect copy in heaven. given, brought down by the angel Gabriel to Muhammad. Whereas for Joseph Smith, for example, the perfect book, the Book of Mormon, is on the golden tablets, and they were written by the angel Moroni, the son of Mormon, who died after the end of the tribe or people of the Nephites. And so, yes, both of these, their books are therefore superior and to be followed. Now, of course, Mormonism has changed a little bit now. Once in a while, they'll call the New Testament the other book, for example, inspired book. But nevertheless, I might say that their books are superior, and they are the ones that are to be followed.
Dr. Alvin Schmidt is Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College. He's authored the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for April called The American Muhammad. And next time we're going to be talking with him about the moral parallels between Muhammad and Joseph Smith. Dr. Schmidt, thank you very much for being our guest.
Well, thank you for having me again.
When we come back on this Thursday afternoon, April the 4th, we're going to talk about two issues with Dr. Robert Gagnon. One of them has to do with the evangelical compromise that's underway on the issue of divorce. It's not a surprising compromise, but I mean, he could see it coming, but it's there nonetheless, and it needs a response. Also, the common argument is that in the Old Testament book of Genesis, the story of Sodom and Gomorrah doesn't speak to homosexuality per se, but to a deviant form of it. Is that true? We'll answer those questions with Dr. Robert Gagnon in the last half hour of Issues Etc., and that's next.
Hi, this is Pastor Dan Kistler of Our Savior's Lutheran Church in Pacifica, California. A small congregation on the Pacific Coast just south of San Francisco, we invite you to join us as we receive Christ's gifts of forgiveness, life, and salvation that He won for us on the cross and now delivers to us through His Word, baptism, and the Lord's Supper. For more information about us or for free downloadable sermons, visit our website at oursaviorspacifica.com. God's peace be with you always in our Savior, Jesus Christ.
Did you know that Logia, a journal of Lutheran theology, sells CDs and audio downloads of teachings by some of the top Lutheran theologians in the country? Check out Logia's 99-cent download of the month at shop.logia.org. Shop.logia.org. You'll also find books published by Luther Academy and, of course, the quarterly Logia Journal at shop.logia.org. Continuing education for the confessional Lutheran, shop.logia.org.
The Association of Evangelical Lutheran Congregations invites you to our third annual free conference and business meeting, April 16 through 18, at Trinity Lutheran Church, Austin, Texas. The conference theme is Christ for Us, the Divine Service. Speakers include Reverend Rick Sawyer, Reverend Dr. Richard Stuckwish, Reverend Brian Wolfbuehler, and others. Details are available at www.acelc.net.
Pastor Todd, I downloaded your Issues Etc. app for my Android phone, and I listen to it while I'm on the treadmill.
You can listen to Issues Etc. live or on demand with the new Issues Etc. Android or iPhone app. You can download these apps at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. in the palm of your hand. Download an app today.
My new Adam really enjoys the app while I'm on the treadmill.
Sophisticated Lutheran apologetics. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Issues Etc. relies on a small group of faithful supporters called the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. These people have pledged to become monthly or annual contributors to Issues Etc., and this allows us to budget our expenses more efficiently. Now, there are four levels of giving. The Confessor, $25 monthly or an annual gift of $250. The Apologist, $50 monthly or an annual gift of $500. The Reformer, $100 monthly or an annual gift of $1,000. And the Patron, $200 monthly or an annual gift of $2,000. Each Reformation Club member receives premiums like books, transcripts, and the I Have Issues t-shirt. You can join the Issues Etc. Reformation Club by contacting Craig. His email address, craig@issuesetc.org. Or you can call 618-223-8385, 618-223-8385, the Issues Etc. Reformation Club.